True Crime Society podcast contains adult themes and violence and is not intended for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. And if you'd like to skip the intro or move to any specific part of the podcast, please refer to the timestamps listed in the episode description. Thank you. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of True Crime Society Podcast with Stephanie and Olivia. It is Mother's Day when you are listening to this, or around Mother's Day. It is March here, though, currently, so we're just pretending that it's Mother's Day. So
yeah.
On the Patreon, I asked Olivia if she had any Mother's Day plans that she knew about months in advance, but she will be traveling, so she does kind of know about them.
Hopefully. I'm still not quite sure if it'll all happen, but we'll see.
Speaking of Mother's Day, I have both of my children here. Jack is visiting. He's holding on to the microphone stand if there's any noise. And Peep is also here. We're all here together. And so is Mike.
Oh, God. Stop.
Yeah, we're all sitting on the bed in my podcast studio. JK, it's my bedroom.
It's funny here because it's actually, we're pre-recording some episodes for when I go on this trip. So it's Sunday morning here, which we don't usually pre-record. And I've got the whole house to myself. My husband's gone to get the groceries. Oh. One kid had a sleepover for a birthday party last night and the other kid stayed with my sister-in-law. So I've got the whole house. It's quite peaceful.
I was going to say, it's so early for no one to be there.
Yeah, I know. 8:40 a.m. And we've already recorded the Patreon. We're powering on today.
Yeah. You want to talk about a comment that yeah, someone so left?
If you are a regular listener, you'll know that we have been doing Patreon shout outs and all that. But because we're pre-recording, we're not going to do that in this episode. So if you have joined us on Patreon, we will definitely say your name. But if you're wondering why, it's just because we're pre-recording. But while we were recording our Patreon, I was just looking through our Spotify comments, which we love, and most of them are great and lovely and, you know, a good conversation we have with people on there. But I just thought this one was funny and I wanted to give them a shout out. Their name is M. Villa. Don't know the real name. The girl with the accent tells this story like she's so bored and could care less about what she's reading. That's it. So it just is so funny to me because, A, we both have accents depending on where you're coming from. Even some people may say you have like a regional accent based on where you're from in America. It's not just an American accent. But I'm thinking she's probably she's talking about me. So I responded, I wrote, "Hi, Olivia here. I'm Australian, so I think you mean me, although we both have accents depending on where you come from. Thanks for your feedback." This was in regards to the Claudia Lawrence case, which was our most recently released case, where it was about the British woman who's been missing in the UK for 17 years. I just wrote, "I've actually followed Claudia's case since it happened and wrote 20 pages plus of notes for this episode, but I will try to be more enthusiastic about these horrendously sad cases ongoing." I feel like we can't win because people are like, enough laughing, enough being happy about these cases, which I don't feel like we are. I feel like we are respectful in terms of the cases, but I just, I can't win. I need to be more enthusiastic.
I feel like both of us try to just kind of read them in like a level, calm.
Yeah. It's like we are telling a story or telling someone's the facts about someone's disappearance. It's not like we're just having a joke and having a laugh about a case. We're here to actually tell the facts about what someone spoke about, you know, what happened to someone. So it's, we can't win.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. I would talk about different things different ways. I'm not going to sound enthused and joyous.
No.
But I don't think we sound bored either. I think people just need to like shut the fuck up sometimes.
Like, do you know what? If I listen to a podcast and I don't like the tone of voice or I just, you know, whatever, I just think, okay, that's not for me and I move on.
Yeah.
But I just, yeah, we can't win. I feel like it has been a while since we've had any hate mail though, so.
And it was about you and not me, hopefully.
Okay, but then in saying that, so that person obviously doesn't like me, but then I guess listener of the week this week can be Chef Steph, which is a funny name. She said, "I just love your stories about Australian wildlife and life in Australia in general. It's so interesting." Thank you. Because I don't know. I feel like some people are here for the chat. Some people don't like the chat. We put the timestamps in. But I feel, you know, when we get comments like that, it's really nice. People take, see, again, took time out of their day to write a few seconds of nice feedback, which was lovely.
Yeah, definitely. Some people love the chat. Some people hate it. try to accommodate everyone. We could just, me and Olivia could just do a whole podcast of just chat.
It's funny because I was just like, this is basically making my point, but sometimes we're like, oh, I've got nothing to talk about. And then we always find something to talk about.
We always do.
So even in this episode, I'm like, what are we going to talk about? Because we're pre-recording. It's going to be, you know, not current chat. So anyway, we have found something anyway.
Yeah. We always find a way to chit chat.
Yeah.
Okay. So moving on abruptly, we are going to be talking about the case of Tanya McGeehan this episode. She shot and killed her daughter, Adeline, Addie Smith. We posted about this. They were at like a cheer competition. It's a pretty recent one, so we're going to get into that.
A heartbreaking end to a search for a missing mother and daughter. Less than 24 hours after they were last seen, their bodies were discovered in an off-strip hotel. Good evening. I'm Marie Mortera. Our Jane Davenport joins us here live in studio with more on what police, Jane, are describing as a murder-suicide.
Marie, they are describing it as a murder-suicide, but they're also describing it as a tragedy. Homicide Lieutenant Robert Price held a briefing tonight to share the preliminary details on the case, what we know so far. He says dispatch received a call at 10:45 Sunday morning for a welfare check on that mother and her daughter. Security at the Rio Hotel went to their room, and after knocking and calling, they received no response. But at that time, they did not have enough information to make entry into that room. So after speaking with family and others, security went back up to the room around 2:30 that afternoon to check on the mother and daughter again.
At that point in time, security decided to make entry into the room, where when they entered the room, they located two deceased females.
Lieutenant Price says security backed out of that room, called 911, and detectives arrived and secured the scene to begin their investigation. Now, he shared preliminary details from that investigation, saying the mother and daughter came into town for a cheer competition.
Sometime last night, the mother shot her daughter and then shot herself. This is a sad and tragic incident, and our hearts go out to the family.
While police have not confirmed the identity of the mother and daughter, the cheer team did post to their Facebook tonight. It reads in part, quote, "With the heaviest hearts, we share the devastating news that our sweet athlete Addie has passed away. We are completely heartbroken. No words do the situation justice. She was so beyond loved, and she will always be a part of the UXC family." And Marie, just 6 hours before that post, the cheer team posted that missing persons poster to alert people, but now it's an unimaginable outcome.
Behind the bright lights of Las Vegas, a city built on spectacle and escape, a far darker story unfolded inside a quiet hotel room where Tanya McGeehan made a decision that would end two lives, including that of her own young daughter. What could lead a mother to carry out such a heinous act? Tanya McGeehan, who's 34 years old, shot and killed her daughter, Adeline Addie Smith, who was 11, while they were in Las Vegas for a cheer competition. She then took her own life. We first heard about this case as a missing persons case, and there was a lot of online chatter about it because it was, just one of those ones that people picked up right away, maybe because of the cheer competition. They're in Vegas. There's like a cute picture of mom and daughter. A lot of people posted it.
So yeah, I actually came across this online. People like started sending it to us on Instagram and Facebook, and I made the post in our Facebook group about it when they were first missing. And it was kind of... it was mysterious because we know that they arrived in Las Vegas and all of a sudden they just kind of went missing, and the people, like, it was mainly members of their cheer community who were saying, has anyone seen them? Because they were last seen at the New York Hotel, even though they were staying at the Rio. So basically they were at the New York either for dinner or some type of function or some type of part of the cheer competition, and that was the last time anyone knew them to be alive, was at a different hotel to where they were staying. But it was known that they made it to the competition, so it wasn't like they got into a car accident on the way or anything like that. They got there, They were seen by other people, so it was kind of like, well, what could have happened? There was a lot of comments about human trafficking, which, you know, how we feel about that often. But it was something like, it was just strange that they were there and then all of a sudden they didn't show up to any of their events that they were scheduled to go to.
I also just think, as like a mom and daughter at a cheer competition in Las Vegas, like, I know Las Vegas could be like, not like dangerous, but, you know, a lot of people drinking, a lot of people partying, doing things. But I feel like in these terms, it seemed like a pretty safe situation to be in. Yeah.
And there was like a bunch of people there for this competition. Like even we had a lot of members in our group commenting, saying I was there, or I know like, there, I feel like the cheer community is a very big one. Like my, I don't want to call myself a dance mom, but I kind of am. My
but
kids
you are.
Dance. I'm not a crazy dance mom, but my kids dance. But I'm like, it's the same type of community where, you know, everyone knows everyone. Everyone knows what competitions are going on. People often go to the same competitions year in and year out. So I agree. Like even though I, like you said, it is Vegas, I feel like it would have been, you know, family friendly enough that it's there was nothing weird about it.
So as Olivia was just saying, we learned that the mother and daughter were staying at the Rio Hotel, but were last seen by members of the cheer team at New York, New York around 8 p.m. on February 14th, 2026. Before we delve into the full story, we'll get into some background on the people involved. Tanya was born on April 7th, 1991 in Salt Lake City, Utah. We believe that Bradley Smith married Tanya around 2014, and Adeline was likely born that same year. Her obituary doesn't say her birthday, but calculated it by her being 11 years old in February 2026. So by 2015, Tanya and Bradley were in the process of getting divorced. Bradley listed his wedding ring for sale on Facebook in August 2016 and wrote, "I only wore the ring for a year." He's selling it for $400. It's a very gaudy looking ring.
He says, yeah, the ring has been cleaned and inspected. I have all the paperwork on the ring as well. The ring was bought from Shane Co. size 7. So, like, literally the marriage lasted around a year. The next year he was trying to offload his ring. It didn't last very long at all.
Yeah. The divorce is finalized in 2017, and over the next 9 years, the couple fought over custody of Addie. It was originally agreed that Addie would live with Tanya while Bradley would have joint custody. Tanya was involved in 5 incidents involving custodial interference or electronic harassment between June 2017 and August 2020. According to court records, she pleaded guilty to 2 misdemeanor charges, which were later dismissed through a plea in abeyance, though a judge denied her request to expunge them from her record. In another case, she received probation and a suspended jail sentence, while in a 4th, a misdemeanor charge was reduced to an infraction. In a 5th case, the charge she faced was dismissed. Oh my God, there's so much going on that I'm struggling to say them all.
That's a very chaotic time.
Yeah. In May 2020, the court issued an order to show cause directing Tanya to appear and explain why she should not be held in contempt for allegedly failing to pay insurance costs and for denying parent time. The order warned she could face sanctions, including up to 30 days in jail. In December 2020, Bradley was granted sole physical custody on a temporary basis. The judge found it was in Addie's best interest to change custody. The judge had concerns that Tanya had engaged in behavior described as being on the spectrum of parental alienation and had committed domestic abuse in the child's presence. The order also questioned her co-parenting skills and required that her parent time be supervised by a third party at her expense. Oof, harsh.
Yeah.
Just to note that Bradley does also have a record. His record includes a DUI in 2023, a few traffic offenses, and child support liens in 2015 and 2024, and a trespassing charge from 2013 that was dismissed. In May 2024, a judge signed an order modifying the divorce decree, awarding the parents joint legal and joint physical custody on a week-on, week-off schedule. Exchanges were to take place at the child's school when in session or at the Harriman Police Department when school was not in session. The order required the parents to park 5 stalls apart during exchanges and prohibited either from recording the child during those transitions. One attorney said, "That's a red flag. If you have to mandate 5 parking spaces, things are really having to be controlled here." I thought the same thing. That's not that I am an expert in this at all or know much about, but I was like, I've never heard anyone else say that before.
Yeah.
Just makes you wonder what happened in the past that led up to that. The order also permitted the other parent to keep Addie overnight if one was unable to pick her up from school during the scheduled parent time. Both Tanya and Bradley were barred from approaching one another at school events, and the court ordered the 2 to encourage and accept a positive relationship between Addie and the opposing parent and to keep their personal conflicts away from the youngster. They also had to make Addie available for FaceTime on Tuesday and Friday nights at 6 p.m. The parents were each given a 15-minute window to make the call or risk forfeiting it for the day. The parents were forbidden from criticizing each other in front of Addie and banned from letting their relatives do the same in front of their daughter. The judge said, if a parent is unable to restrain a third party from making such remarks, that parent shall remove the child from the presence of that person. The two were ordered to use the Family Wizard, which is an app that offers messaging between couples who share children. Bradley and Tanya were told they could only text each other directly if there was an emergency involving their daughter. So, yeah, it seems like a lot is being very tightly controlled here.
I understand that, you know, when marriages go sour, things can be very difficult, but I don't know. I can never imagine, obviously someone might come at me and say, well, you've never been in that situation, which I get, but it's just so much for them not even to be able to be civil for the sake of their only daughter together.
Yeah. And I just want, like, there's no background as far as we know that's out there as to like what happened between them that led to all of this.
It just sounds like it was a totally toxic relationship. Like for it only to last 1 year, their marriage, it's not like there was years and years and years of this going on that, you know, caused this animosity between them. It was a very quick marriage. They obviously both were just very strong-willed in what they wanted to happen after the divorce. And they, I guess, both, it sounds like apparently, both of them were equally as toxic as the other.
Yeah. And apparently they loved talking shit about each other in front of the kid. In front of Addie, it seems. Bradley was ordered to pay $288 a month to Tanya and was in arrears totaling over $9,600 as of February 2024. It's unclear if he ever caught up on those payments. What happens when they die? They just go away.
No.
There are 350 submissions in relation to the divorce and custody battle. Most of them are sealed. Bradley did remarry in 2020 to a woman named McKinley. McKinley made references online to Addie as, quote, my daughter, and she posted multiple photos of her. Tanya also made multiple social media posts over the years about the situation, which is always just like a red flag to me. Because I'm like, you don't need to be putting this on Facebook. It's so
And especially after the judge has basically ordered them not to say anything bad about
the other. Shut up.
Yeah, like I agree. There's no reason for any of this to be put on social media.
Yeah, as a bystander, I'm like, yes, let me read this. But realistically, just keep this stuff off Facebook. So, for example, one post that she posted says, it has screenshots of texts and says, two texts from this weekend Addie has sent that have completely broke my heart and pissed me off. Didn't plan on sharing on Facebook too, but I'm just so sick of this. Also, her response to my question was, no, Daddy wasn't home. She was home alone with her five-year-old brother. I asked if they had milk or bread, and both were a no. I wanted to send her something or even bring her something so bad, but I knew she'd get in trouble. The moment Brad goes through her text from this weekend, I doubt she'll be able to text me again. I'm so frustrated for this life and wish there was anything I could do. She's such a happy girl, and her asking why she has to be so sad completely broke me. She's been texting me all day that she doesn't feel good and is sad. Poor girl still has till the 21st before she comes back home. And this was on August 13th.
Yeah, so there is
2023.
Some of the texts are cut off, but Addie writes to her mum, I'm shaking, and the mum writes, how come? And she says, I'm hungry, there's no food. And then she said, is Daddy home? So if that is the case, that is sad. But yeah, I agree. Don't put on Facebook.
Yeah. And there's another string of like comments on something from 2018. And Tanya said, there's a picture of Addie with like a bump on her head. And Tanya wrote, I doubt on purpose, but Addie said they went golfing and she was crying, so he kept hitting it to make her laugh and it hit her. In parentheses, sounds like he was hitting them around her. Not sure, though. I wish the picture showed the huge goose egg. So I take that as he was hitting the ball to try to make her laugh and she accidentally got hit by one.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
And then the people are commenting like, poor baby, blah, blah, blah. So again, it doesn't really need to be on Facebook. Why are we doing this?
Yeah.
Another update from her in 2022, January 2022. His update from today. I said I agreed with the evaluator's recommendation and wanted to proceed with that being in the order. I guess Brad did it, and now our next step is mediation on April 1st, which is fitting. It's all a big joke, and then I'll find out what Brad wants to change. My attorney is still attempting to have it solved before then, but if it isn't and we don't agree at mediation, then it'll go to trial. I doubt we will agree since I won't agree to having less custody and having Addie's school changed, which I think is what Brad wants to argue. And someone commented and said, he doesn't seem to have our best interests at heart. I hope you can get it worked out soon. And Tanya said, he never has, and I highly doubt he ever will. He wanted her to have two separate doctors just so he doesn't have to drive 10 to 20 minutes extra to go to the doctor she's had since she was born. So, like, I understand, like, divorce, I don't understand from personal experience, but from all these cases, I know like divorce can be horrible, toxic, awful, but like she just sounds like exhausting. And I'm not saying Brad is the good guy by any means. We don't know anything about him, but I'm just saying her personally with these posts, like, it's exhausting. It's too much. The judge is literally like, stop doing this.
And I don't understand that too. Like, if the judge is literally like, be civil to each other, don't let anyone make disparaging comments about the other, you know, the other ex-spouse, but she's out there on Facebook, even as most recently as a few years ago. Like, obviously these are just the few screenshots that we've got, but it seems like this was an ongoing theme. It was something that she did all throughout this custody battle. Just wouldn't have been working in her favor to do so. I don't understand why. I guess she used it as like a venting platform, or as, you know, maybe it was her support where people would, because people did make comments.
It's like text them though.
Yeah, I know. Like, do it privately. There's no need to have it on Facebook, where now, like, for instance, we have the screenshots. So it was
me, who doesn't know any of these people.
Publicly available for someone who was going through such a horrible custody battle and was told to be civil and not have any contact or say anything bad about the other partner.
And just like, it does nothing to protect your child. Like, if she got the chance to grow up, like, I don't think she'd want all of her business online for literally anyone to read, basically. Like, growing up, when you go to high school or whatever age you are, like, you can get bullied. People can look that stuff up and like, talk, be mean to you about it. Like, just, it was a dumb choice on her part.
So that is the background that we have into Addie and Tonya and her dad and everything that was going on. So it sounds like there was this big, messy custody situation. And as of 2026, which is when this horrible incident happened, Addie was a member of the Utah Extreme Cheer Team, which they call UXC. She and Tonya traveled to Las Vegas to take part in the competition, as we mentioned. They were last seen by the other team members Saturday, February 14th of this year, 2026. So the following day was February 15th, and Bradley, Addie's dad, began to worry when he couldn't get in touch with Tonya or Addie. At 10:43 a.m., he called the Las Vegas Police Dispatch to request a welfare check. Bradley told the dispatcher that nobody on the cheer team had heard from them and he couldn't get a hold of either of them. He said he had spoken with them the day before and everything seemed fine. I'm assuming he probably spoke with Addie. You know, it doesn't sound like he and Tonya were having a very cordial relationship, but either way, he knew they'd arrived in Vegas safe and they were there. Bradley told authorities that Tonya had prescription medication with her, but he didn't believe that she had a gun or any problems with any other illegal substances or any substances.
We are now hearing the 911 calls made by the father of a Utah girl shot and killed by her mother earlier this month. Police say 34-year-old Tonya McGeehan shot and killed her 11-year-old daughter, Adeline Smith. This happened February 15th at the Rio Hotel and Casino. We are hearing that they were here for a cheer competition, and we've reported that McGeehan and the girl's father have been involved in a long custody battle. The calls that we received are from the girl's father and his wife, as well as a member of the cheer team, asking police to check on the mother and daughter.
Trying to figure out where my daughter and her mom is. They were supposed to be at a dance competition this morning. They didn't show up. People went to the hotel room. They're not answering the door. They're not answering messages or just even seeing the messages. I don't think there's any more information. It's just, I need someone there. I need someone there looking in that room.
Let me see.
It
looks like we are in the room. Looks like our officers are active there.
Inside the room? Because I know they've been there to knock.
I believe so. Yeah.
And what can you tell me about that?
Are you here in Vegas?
No, I'm in Utah. My wife, my ex-wife and my daughter is there.
What's your name?
Your competition.
And so just to reiterate, this is some of what was said in the call. He said, I'm trying to figure out where my daughter and her mum is. They were supposed to be at a dance competition this morning. They didn't show up. People went to their hotel room. They're not answering the door. They're not answering messages, or they're not even seeing the messages. It's very strange. So authorities did go to the room at the Rio Hotel and they knocked on the door. They got no response. They said they knocked and called into the room several times and still got no response. They spent around 15 minutes conducting this welfare check. The police said later they knocked several times and they called into the room without any answer. At that point in time, without anything else and no other information and nothing else suspicious, the officers advised security and they were cleared from that call. So I do kind of understand that, you know, there was no reports of any sounds or any, you know, signs of a struggle coming from the room. You can't just barge into someone's room. They could be anywhere in Vegas. Mm-hmm. They could have purposely not be answering their phones. I know people have criticized why not more was done at this first welfare check.
It's not
check.
Like they were meant to check out or anything. No. They were past due. So.
And it was like 10:43 a.m. Like, it's very explainable that they could be out sightseeing or doing other things. I understand that there were mitigating circumstances, like they were meant to be at the cheer competition. They didn't show up, all those type of things. But still, easily explainable at 10:43 a.m. So as you mentioned, there was no reason for them to think the mother and the daughter were in danger at the time. They had no legal reason to force entry into the room, so they left. So it is believed that Tonya and Addy drove a vehicle to the Rio and that car was still said to be in the lot at that time. So this is why people were speculating about human trafficking. They're like, well, they were obviously made it there, but they're not there, so something has happened to them. And like, I've been to Vegas a few times. People were saying that to get to the Rio, it feels like you can walk it from the strip, but it's actually this kind of weird, it's like an illusion almost that it seems much closer than the walk actually is. And they were commenting that the walk was dangerous and maybe something happened to them along the walk and they were kidnapped or abducted or trafficked. And those were the types of scenarios that people were going through at the time. So this was at the point that the missing persons reports and posters started being circulated online. This is one of the posts that we saw and it was from the cheer team. It says, Utah Extreme Cheer is asking for the public's help in locating a missing athlete and her mother who were last seen in Las Vegas. They said, this is not the post we ever wanted to make, but we need the cheer community's help. At this point, we are extremely worried and police have been contacted. So McKinley, who is Addie's stepmother and Bradley's wife, made this post. She said, my daughter Addie and her mum are missing. Please share the post and call and text with any information. Thank you. So it did kind of get disseminated very quickly. They had only, like, they'd been missing for around 12-ish hours by the time, I guess, people started to become alarmed. But yeah, so it did make the rounds a lot online regarding them both being missing. So when Addie and Tonya were still not found by the afternoon, another welfare check was requested. A cheer coach called 911 asking for police, saying Tonya had not shown up and that she doesn't necessarily have custody of her child. Dispatcher told the coach they already had a request to check on them, but the coach called back a few minutes later saying they now had concerns that Tonya may have fled with Addie. So again, this is kind of insinuating that a lot of people knew about this whole custody scenario and that everyone was aware of the, I guess, hostility between Brad and Tonya. Yeah. The coach said her mum has a bunch of medical issues. They're staying at the Rio, but no one can get a hold of them. We think the child, because she doesn't have custody, we think the child possibly is in imminent danger. So the hotel won't give us any information on if they're in the room or not. It has to go through you guys. So after they got this information, hotel security went back to the hotel room and knocked. When they still got no response, this time they did enter the room and they found Tonya and Addie were lying dead in the bed in the hotel room. Police said when they, as in the hotel security, entered the room, they located two deceased females. They immediately backed up and called 911. Patrol arrived and secured the scene. So very quickly, like that same day, police came out and said that this was a murder-suicide. They said Tonya shot Addie before taking her own life. There were no reports of gunshots being heard by other hotel guests, which is interesting. So I wonder if she did use a silencer. Maybe she got lucky and there was just no one else around to hear the shot. I know the Rio is undergoing renovations and like I've read things that it's kind of a bit of a dodgy hotel. So maybe there just wasn't anyone staying in their immediate vicinity to hear about it. I don't know. But for some reason,
yeah, that's pretty crazy. But
yeah. A note was left in the room. As of the time of recording this episode, the contents of the note haven't been made public. The note was said to have been pinned to the hotel door. I'm presuming that means to the inside of the door because obviously if they're going to do these two welfare checks, they would have seen the note. It just says pinned to the hotel door. So it sounds like she put it there so it wouldn't get lost amongst their belongings and that someone would be sure to see whatever the note said. Tonya's attorney, James Watts, spoke to the media about the note. He said it's the family's hope at some point that it would be returned to Tonya's family and her mother who would like to know what was in it at the time. So it sounds like the family don't even know at this point what the note said. Mm-hmm. A spokesperson from Addie's cheer team made this statement after the bodies were found. She said, with the heaviest hearts, we share the devastating news that our sweet athlete Addie has passed away. We are completely heartbroken. No words do the situation justice. She was so beyond loved and she will always be a part of the UXC family. Please keep her family in your thoughts and prayers and continue to send them love as they navigate this unimaginable loss. We ask that you respect their privacy during this time. Addie, we love you tremendously. So since the murder-suicide, there have been some reports that Tonya had been bullied by other cheer mums. According to her mother, Tonya had been sent, quote, mean texts by one or two other women with daughters in the Utah Extreme Cheer Team. Her mother is Connie McGeehan, and she said there's one or two ladies that she never got along with and it got really bad a month ago. In the last comp they had, another girl got dropped and some of the mums were saying it was because of Addie. They were texting Tonya mean stuff and blaming Addie. Cheer was her and Addie's life. I think something happened the day before they died that made her spiral. Connie also said that Tonya had been struggling with mental illness. She said that she struggled with depression for her whole life but appeared to be turning a corner recently. She said that Tonya and Addie had been living with her in her 7-bedroom home in Salt Lake City. She went on to say Addie loved her gymnastics. She loved her friends. She always seemed happy no matter what. Connie spoke about their plans to go to Vegas and the trip that they were, you know, were on at the time that all of this happened. And she said that Tonya had been excited to attend the cheer competition. She'd made gifts for other team members, bought new clothes, and had posted photos of Addie doing backflips in their hotel room at around 5 a.m. on the Sunday. So the Sunday was the 15th, which was the day. Like, so they were last seen on the 14th at 8 p.m., but she was still alive unless she did some type of scheduled post at 5 a.m. on the Sunday. Connie went on to say, they just looked like they were happy, and there was one pic of Addie and Tonya together, and I thought something doesn't look right. The look was off. Something had happened. Something was off. She went on to say, we had no idea that Tonya was contemplating this and I thought she was doing okay. She'd been having some of the cheer mums over and making things with the kids. As Bradley mentioned in the 911 call, he didn't think Tonya had a gun. Connie also said that she had no idea that Tonya had a gun or that she'd taken it to Vegas with them. She said, we've since learned that she bought it over a year ago. So I guess there could have been reasons for that. Maybe she thought she needed protection. Maybe this had been in the plan for a while. I don't know. I don't know if we'll ever know. But for some reason, or in 2025, at some point, she had purchased this gun. A source close to the cheer team confirmed that there had recently been a, quote, confrontation between Tonya and another one of the mums in the team waiting room. The UXC team owner named Corey Utaki told the New York Post that he was aware there had been comments back and forth between Tonya and some of the other mums, but that everything seemed normal on Saturday after the team all travelled from Utah to Nevada for the competition. He went on to say Addie was in her first season as a member on the team and loved it, and added that she was the first to practice every time. She was this beautiful girl and she didn't deserve this, he went on to say. Since the murder-suicide, there has been investigation by the media into the kind of mean girl world of cheer mums, which was an interesting aspect to the case. This info is from the New York Post and it talks about the whole, I guess, phenomenon of it. It says, an investigation by the Post uncovered Facebook threads riddled with venom, mums accusing other children of stealing spots, threatening to report rival families to gym owners and celebrating when rival competitors faltered. In comments, parents blasted judges as corrupt and labelled 10 and 11-year-olds as lazy. One mum wrote, so many of these mums are living through their daughters. Their makeup is pasted on, their hair is glued down. It looks like an old lady's. Why in life does it have to be a competition? Let them have fun, laugh, positivity, etc. Another mum from Nevada described Facebook groups where parents dissected children's performances frame by frame. She went on to say, they're 10, but you'd think this was the Olympics, the way the people act. If your daughter gets center stage, another mum is messaging three others about how the coach is playing favorites. Several parents also claimed that it was common for cheer mums to accuse each other's children of stealing spotlight positions and to suggest certain families had inside influence. These are some comments that I've pulled from the article. Someone wrote on Facebook, so many cheer mums are the absolute worst, just brutal freaks. This is the perfect use case for you don't know what someone else is going through, just be kind. The mother is still at fault. She clearly was having mental difficulties and a jerk pushed her over the edge. For what, most of their children won't go on to cheer forever. It's a sick world.
My only thing, not to like interrupt what you're saying, just was thinking about it because you said a jerk pushed her over the edge. She planned and brought the gun with her.
Mm-hmm.
So So it's like, not like it was this like instant, like something happened and she was like, just
even if
like
she needed a knee-jerk
reaction.
Like her original purpose for buying the gun, let's say, was for protection from Bradley or someone else that she was worried about. She wasn't like, I don't know. I know people carry guns for protection anyway, but like to a cheer competition with your daughter in Vegas, is that really a place that you'd be feeling the most threatened? I don't know. I feel like she took the gun with a plan to do this.
Yeah, agree. Not saying that there wasn't like cheer mom drama, but I just don't think it was like a knee-jerk reaction to something.
Yeah. So these are just some other interesting aspects of kind of the bullying in the cheer world that I pulled out. Someone said, it's like high school, but with credit cards and carpools. If you didn't align with the dominant mums, your kid felt it. And that mother said that she made her decision to pull her daughter from a competitive team last year. And I'm not saying also, just to clarify, that these aren't all related to Addie's team members. This is just about the cheer mum world in general. And people are relaying their experiences after this and insinuating that maybe Tonya felt bullied because of her experience as a cheer mum. Mm-hmm. Another cheer mum from Utah said, it's not the girls who make it unbearable, it's the parents. The gossip, the jealousy, the group chats, it's relentless. Another mum, this one from Texas, said that she spent more than $15,000 in a single season on her daughter's cheer, I guess, career. The lady said, when you're paying that kind of money, some parents start to see it as an investment. And when the return isn't a first place trophy, they look for someone to blame. One mum wrote, I walked out of the gym with my daughter last year and I never went back. And then another mum wrote, I just dropped my kid off and head to the nail salon so I don't have to deal with any of that. That's probably what I would do. This is a conversation I found online and I pulled it just to discuss because I thought it was quite interesting. They're talking about the cheer world toxicity. Someone wrote, does not excuse their actions. Unfortunately, in this sport, many girls and mums can be very mean. Many coaches pit the girls against each other, do not support team building. And someone replies to that person and says, it doesn't, but sending mean text to someone with inner thoughts could push someone to the edge. She may have not been stable and everything just ticked her off. Mental health is a real thing. So people should be a little nicer and thoughtful as we never know what one person is going through. Not justifying what she did though, because that poor girl had her life ahead of her. Someone said it's also in dance. I've seen it too. And then there's this other person commenting, right, I've dealt with that for 4 years with mums at our high school. Even the coach we bumped head with, and never did it cross my mind to end my life or my daughter's life. That is satanic if you ask me. So there's a lot of theories out there. I like in terms of the main theories about why this happened, the two ones I feel are mental illness. And I guess this maybe she was being bullied within the cheer community and that could have led to an escalation in her mental health declining. I don't feel like the cheer part of it was the only reason for doing this. I feel like it was probably just a part of this whole entire mess that led to this murder-suicide happening.
Yeah, I agree. I think she clearly had mental health issues. And that's really what it came down to. Like that person said, a lot of people deal with kind of bullying in sports and mean girl behavior as adults still and as kids. And most people don't kill themselves and their daughter.
No. And also, like, obviously, there's been this documented history of, like, I feel like the divorce history shows that there is some mental illness going on. Like, just the way that she acted, the way that Bradley acted, I don't know, you know, what was going on. There was a lot going on there, so that would have been a stressor. The fact that she was living with her mother, that would have been probably a stressor, I'm assuming, too. Plus the fact that, you know, this cheer thing is a lot of money. Like, I don't know how much it cost mm-hmm. them to go to Vegas. I'm assuming it would have been at least a few $1,000s. The competitions cost a lot. I know in terms of dance, everything costs
costumes,
a lot of money.
Everything.
So that could be a financial stressor on her. So she's got the custody battle that still seems to be ongoing. Her contentious relationship with Bradley, this obvious financial stressor. She was living with her mother. She was, you know, enabling her daughter to participate in a very, very expensive hobby. I just feel like there was a lot going on. And it's if there was this cheer bullying, that could have just been the absolute straw that broke the camel's back.
I think it was mostly a fuck you to Bradley, though.
Yeah, I guess. I don't get me wrong, I feel like that absolutely was part of it, but I feel like maybe it was just more of a desperation thing at the end for me. Yeah. That's the feeling I get.
I guess it could be, like she wanted to end her own life but didn't want add you to like go with him.
Yeah, absolutely. I could see that. But I also wondered too, if she did it in Vegas, like she clearly took the gun with her for a reason. I wonder if she did it in Vegas because she wanted Addie to have like one kind of last little fun experience day. And, you know, do it in a fun place, like be happy one final time, like kind of like a final goodbye essentially. And maybe she did it while Addie was sleeping in the bed. I hope that's what happened. And Addie had no idea what was going on. So I could see, like, otherwise, why bother going to the cheer competition? Why make this effort to drive all that way and, you know, participate in part of it and then to carry out the murder-suicide? I feel like that would be her reasoning. She's like, okay, this is enough. I can't take this anymore. I don't have any money. I have all these other things going on. I just want one last nice time with my daughter. I could see that being her kind of unhinged reasoning at the end.
Also, me, so her mom didn't have to find their bodies either. Yep.
I feel like a lot of times that's why people do it in hotels or in public places, because they know that they'll be found by someone else other than their family, and they will also be found quickly. So it's not like she could have done it, for instance, in their car in the middle of the desert where they may have not been found for a month. People often do that, so they know that their families will be informed and they will be found quickly. They won't just be kind of laying there for months or even years sometimes waiting for someone to find them.
Yeah. And just to go back to with like all the talk about cheer moms and a lot of the mean girl behavior and cheerleading, I think it's honestly with any like competitive tournament travel sport, because even like me and my sister played travel softball growing up and it was the same stuff. So not to just put a bad name on cheer, like might be a little bit worse there, because I feel like a lot of it is kind of based on like appearance and I don't know the right word, like just like the performance in general.
Yeah.
I feel like that could add like a little bit more to it. But I just feel like in every competitive sport, there's always that like favoritism and like the certain groups getting together and like leaving out other parents. And, you know, like I feel like I've always seen that.
I've got their obituaries up, so I can talk about that just to make it a little bit longer quickly. So I don't know if they'll ever release the contents of the note. Maybe they will provide more of an insight as to why Tonya thought this was her only way out, but I feel like we may not ever hear much more about this. This happened just over a month ago. The last media articles were 2 and 3 weeks ago, so I feel like it's one of those cases where it'll just be speculation ongoing. I did find it interesting that their obituaries are both online. I won't read them all because they're quite long, but I've put them in the blog, but I'll just read out. This is part of Addie's, which I'll start with. She goes, they say, with broken hearts and endless love, we announce the passing of our beautiful daughter who was taken from this world far too soon. Addie was a bright light in the life of everyone who knew her. In her short time here from the moment she was born, she was an easy baby, toddler, and kid. She was content with her small world and circle of friends and family. She never wanted or needed much in life. She was always happy. She had a spirit that sparkled as brightly as her smile. Wherever she went, she brought energy and laughter. Her passion for cheerleading filled her days with excitement and purpose. So it just goes on a little bit more. But in Addie's one, there's no mention of surviving family, which I always find interesting. Whereas in Tornia's one, hers, this is how hers starts out. It says, Tornia will always be remembered by those who know and love her as a mother who was passionately in love and devoted to her only daughter, Addie Hope Smith. It says, on February 15th of 2026, the lives of Tonya and her beloved Addie were tragically cut short. Those who knew and loved them are left heartbroken, carrying questions that will forever weigh heavily, but also tightly holding on to the beautiful memories they gave us. Goes on to speak, basically, it's all about Addie, her obituary. She loved making gifts for Addie's cheer team. She loved watching Addie shine. And then it says, her life was defined by her devotion to her family, her friends. Though her time here was far too short, the love Tonya shared will live on in every life she touched. Tonya bravely navigated through years of torment. Her family hopes her memory will inspire greater kindness, compassion, and awareness of the importance of caring for one another. So I did find that interesting.
Very interesting.
Yeah. I feel like obviously Addie's was probably written by Brad and his family. Tornia's was probably written by her mother. Somewhat, you know,
but if I was like Bradley's family or other people in the family that were upset about Addie being murdered, I'd be like, what is with this glowing obituary? Yeah.
And like I always find it interesting in cases of murder-suicide if the perpetrator is included in the obituary, and obviously they were very separate. They were buried separately. So it's very, very clear that this is written by two separate sides of this estranged family. But yeah, I would agree. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's, I have no doubt Tonya did love Addie and she lived for Addie. But yeah, it would be very hard to read as Brad knowing that she was the one responsible for taking the life of your child. And then she's got this glowing review about what a beautiful, great parent she was. It would be a hard thing to read.
Yeah, definitely. I'd be pissed off if I were them.
Yeah.
So that's it for this episode. Everything will be on the blog at truecrimesocietyblog.com. As always, make sure you're following us on Instagram at True Crime Society. We're always posting updates and new stories, old stories, everything going on our Instagram at True Crime Society. If you want to see what we're up to, my Instagram is stuff_some_Olivia's TCS Olivia. If you want to follow us there, make sure you check out our Patreon. We do weekly bonus episodes and all the episodes are ad-free. So you get 2 episodes a week from us without any ads. Plus there's like over 130 bonus episodes in the archive that you would get access to. So we've been having a lot of people join. So hopefully we can keep it going because it's very exciting and nice to see.
I feel like it's good there too because we can cover some different cases than we cover here because it's a little bit quicker. So we can cover cases that they may not necessarily get as much media attention, just maybe ones that you aren't as familiar with, which I think a lot of people find interesting.
Yeah, we definitely do ones that are a little different than ones we do for the main episodes. So like we just did the Google Gemini one and just some other different topics. So check us out on Patreon and all the usual stuff. You could comment on Spotify, comment on Instagram, share to your Instagram stories, show us what you guys are doing while you're listening to the podcast. We love to reshare them and just helps us get the word out. And that's it. So thank you guys for listening. Stay safe out there. Peace out.